As usual, we speak about somebody's yahrzeit who's coming next month. The person we want to speak about is the Radvaz, as opposed to the Ridvaz, that people confuse the two. They were both the Rav of Tzfas, about 300 year difference. The Ridvaz is, he died in the turn of last century. The Radvaz lived in the 14 and 1500s, two very, very different people. And they both ended up in Tzfas, and people mix them up. The Radvaz is the one we're going to speak about. Like always, we'll mention where we get the information, where do I have this information from. So the Radvaz himself left over about 10,000 tshuvas, of which we have printed at 2,500. In his tshuvas, there's a wealth of information, a personal context of the people and times. There's a little bit contemporaries like the Mabit or the Beis Yosef, there's mention, but really there's very little other information. And somebody did write a history of him, but basically it's taking all the bits and pieces from the Tshuvas farm and putting together and making something out of it. That's Kemat what we have. Very, very little other than that. And like I said, he's mentioned the Mabit has a Tshuva without a name, that's about somebody without a, it doesn't mention a name, but it appears to be, it's talking about him. And Beis Yosef mentions him and so on. So basically that's where we know it. But there's quite a lot and quite a very fascinating life. He was born in Spain in 1479, which means he was still before the Golos Farad. He learned under someone named Rabbi Yosef Sargassi, who ended up also leaving Spain like everybody else. And at the age of about 13 or so, he was exiled from Spain with everybody else. They know the stops that he made, but they don't have a clear idea of the years. He made stops in Fez, Morocco, Cairo, Yerushalayim, the Tzfas. Not clear how much time he spent anywhere, but he ended up back in Egypt. That was where the main part of his life was spent. He started out being a Rav in Alexandria and then became the head of the, he moved to Cairo. He became the Chacham Bashi, or the head of the Egyptian Rabbonim. 40 years he was the Rav and the Posek of Egypt, and then he moved to Eretz Yisrael. He moved first to Yerushalayim, and then for a few reasons moved to Tzfas. And that's where he was Nifta. And the age that he was Nifta is not 100% clear. It ranges from 95 years to 110 years. Depending on, again, you try to reconcile different Sfarim, but more or less, he definitely lived an old age, at ripe old age, and that's where he was. He left over, so he had yeshiva, besides being the Rosh Yeshiva, besides being the Rav in Egypt, he also had a yeshiva there. The person who supported it, and it was a very big force in Egypt, was named Rabbi Yitzchok Shalal. There's a street named for Mishalayim. He was the Nogid. Nogid was the head of Egyptian Jewry. It was a government position of sorts. He was a wealthy man, Rabbi Yitzchok Shalal, and he supported a yeshiva and so on. He had a yeshiva there. His two most noted Talmidim are the Shita Mekubetzes, Rabbi Tzal Ashkenazi. Rabbi Tzal Ashkenazi brings him down every once in a while in his Shita Mekubetzes. He quotes Chiddush HaTorah from him. And Arizal. They both learned by the Radvaz. Okay, it's hard to find the Cheshva group of Talmidim, those that we know. And he put out, he wrote a tremendous amount of tshuvas. Like we said, they estimate there's 10,000 tshuvas from him extant, or were extant, of which we have printed 2,500. he wrote a Pirush on the Rambam in different places that the Magid Mishnah is not there. You'll have the Radvaz over there. If you take a look in some parts of Rambam, there's a Radvaz over there. He wrote Sfarim in Kabbalah. He wrote a Sefer on, I think it's called Mitzudas David, on Shir Shirim, a Pirush al Derech HaKabbalah. He wrote something called Magen David on all the Oisis, the Aleph Beis, the meaning of Pikabbalah. And he wrote a whole bunch of other Sfarim. But the most famous things that we have from him are the Tshuvas and the parts on the Rambam. That's really the most famous parts. I want to sketch out, first of all, a little bit about the Tkufa and the different problems that they had, that he had in different places. And then we'll look at some of the Tshuvas and very fascinating in Yanim. So, he ended up in Mitzrayim, in Egypt. In general, the world at that time, the Ottoman Empire was beginning to become the dominant force in the world. It was a miracle, because that's why the Jews could go to all these countries. Spain had thrown them out. Spain and Portugal threw the Jews out. That's where you had the strongest Jewish colonies. And if the Ottoman Empire hadn't been so widespread and so powerful, and it was Muslim, and they were interested in having Jews, we would have had a really tough time of finding places of refuge. Lamaisa, Turkey itself, Egypt, Israel, and Eretz Yisrael served as places of refuge. It was thanks to the fact that the Ottoman Empire was the dominant power. That's one historical nakuda. Egypt, Cairo, and Alexandria were very large Jewish communities. There was a problem brewing, because there had been Egyptian Jewry for a long time. They had the Minhagim. Many of them came from the Rambam. Those Minhagim were frozen in time. And all of a sudden you had an influx of Sephardi Jews, meaning from Spain. I mean, technically, today we would call the Egyptians also Sephardi, but from Spain, a massive influx. You had Jews coming from Western Africa, the Maghreb, which is like Algeria, Morocco. There were Xeris there, they ended up there. You had people coming from Greek and Italian different cities. So you had all of a sudden a community that had been very, very insulated, kind of, or homogenous, better word for it, homogenous with their Minhagim and everything, all of a sudden they had this influx of a huge, many different other kehillas. What happens? Are they all supposed to become batel to the local kehilla? Do they retain their own Minhagim, which were different? And there was a lot of friction on that. So Radvaz was instrumental in dealing with those issues. And we'll see some of the psakim that deal with these issues. There was also politics in the sense that Egypt had been ruled by a Mamluk caste, which was a kind of a caste of semi-slaves, and the Ottoman Empire took it over, but it still retained some of its... It was like autonomous to some degree. The local ruler wanted to rebel against the Ottoman Empire. He tried to get Rabbanim on his side. They were very hesitant, so he cracked down on them and was very mean to them. And then somebody told the Ottoman Empire about what's going on, and they arrested him. There was always a lot of issues. Jews were caught many times between a rock and a hard place. Do you side with your local guy who has immediate power over you, or at some point he's going to run in trouble with the big people in Turkey, and then you have a lot more problems? Those were issues. Yerushalayim had a very... So he was there 40 years, the Radvaz. He then moved on to Yerushalayim. It's not clear any specific reason why, but Radvaz himself writes in a tshuva about living in Egypt, that the issa to live in Egypt is only if you live permanently, but if you're there only to move on, you're allowed to. So he moved on to Yerushalayim. He was a wealthy man, the Radvaz, on his own. He had businesses. He didn't need to be supported by the Kehillah. Yerushalayim asked him to become their Rav. He was very wary of it for a lot of reasons. And he made a condition that he would become their Rav on condition that he gets paid no salary. He doesn't have an official position. The only thing he asked from them is that if he gets in trouble because of them, they should pay the bills. That was the only condition he made. So he was the Pesach there for a few years. He then paskened against a very wealthy and tough family. They went and told the local pasha, the local ruler, that this rabbi here is praving grebistva. He didn't register with you, which was, it's only minimal courtesy that the local rabbi should do. And basically, you really need to be tough with this guy. So he had him arrested, the Radvaz. And he was very nasty, and the Radvaz denied. He said, I don't get a salary, I'm not official. People count me as a child. I answered him, but that's it. He told him, you're a liar. Especially, he found out that Radvaz is a wealthy man. So he especially extorted him. And it was only with a lot of money that he got out. And he went away to Tzfas. He then requested the community that they pay his bills. That was the agreement. He's not taking salary, but if he gets into trouble with the government, which is what happened, they should pay whatever to Gedin. They did not want to, and the Mabit has a tshuva about it. He doesn't mention Radvaz by name, but it's pretty clear. I mean, that's he describes the case exactly as is. In Tzfas and Yerushalayim, there was a lot of rivalry in those days between the two communities. Yerushalayim felt that they deserve prominence as Yerushalayim. There were problems in Yerushalayim. Living was very expensive. The governor was nasty and unbearable. So there was a lot of bigger yishuv in Tzfas, and there was some tension between two cities. The Radvaz lived out in Tzfas as recovered until he was nifta. I want to go back to his tkufa in Egypt, which is his main tkufa, and go through some of the psakim, some in Yonim. The first thing we talked about was this was a new era where a community had been established. The norm was you had a community someplace, and people would come in. They would have to join a community. This incredible flooding of a community with other communities, do they retain their identity or not? This was relevant in Yerushalayim. In Yerushalayim, they had a homogenous Litvisha community and a homogenous Chassidish community, and all of a sudden, they had an influx of people after World War II or that kufa who did not want to become but a local community. What's the halakha? What's the din over there? So the Radvaz writes that really, Barova Mahadis Melech, and everybody should join up and become one community. But since it's going to lead to fights and it's going to create problems, he said a person should daven with a community feels comfortable with. And therefore, since there's no real way to get everybody together and feel that way, then it is preferable they should daven in smaller shuls. He says it's more hadras melach if they daven in smaller shuls where there's peace than they daven in one big shul where they're fighting with each other. That's a psakir advaz. One. Two, there were minhagim that had been instituted by the Rambam and stayed that way. And now people said, this is strange, this is weird, we don't do it this way. And the Radvaz was mevatel them. Two of those minhagim are, first of all, they used to count on a ksuba and a get, not from Brias HaOlam the way we do, but they used to count from the Greek kings. Klal Yisrael had instituted accounting from the Melochim. This is that's when you in the Masechet Rosh Hashanah, when you speak about counting for the Malchus, for the Melochim, when you count 1 year, 2 years, so on, it's because the counting on Ksubis and Gittin and Shtar Kedusha and so on was done based on the Greek kings. It became bottle after the Greeks became irrelevant, especially since the Romans wouldn't be so happy with it. Except in Egypt, the Rambam kept that minyan. He was mevatlet. I didn't find it true, but the Shem Agdolim, the Chidor brings it that he was mevatl the minyan melachim, and he made it like everybody else, which is Bria Solom. That's if you notice ever in a ksuba, it says leminyan shanamoyin kan. Baltimore, Maryland, or Silver Spring. The minyan shel Moynihin means different places had different systems of counting years. Today, everyone counts Bria Solom, but the formula stayed in the shtar is that when we write a date, we also write where this dating is used. That was one takana about the Rambam. There was another takana. The Rambam had a lot of Agmas Nefesh in his community. He saw that during Chazaras HaShatz, people would schmooze around and just kind of, I don't know if they checked their smartphones, but they definitely were hacking around. And he writes that this is an embarrassment for the Muslims who see it. And they say, oh, this is what Jews do. So the Rambam was mevatel shtilo shmoneh esrei. Everybody listened to the Chazan Daven. That was the minhag there. It was an anomaly. It was the only place like that. And the Radvaz was mevatlit. He wrote that if there's going to be a lot of fighting because of it, he held obviously it should be like everywhere else. He said just not at the price of fighting. You know, fighting is not worth it. Baruch Hashem, it went through B'Shalom and they became like everybody else. A lot of the pressure was because you had all of a sudden so many immigrants from different places. And they said this is the strangest meeting we ever saw. It's not like the Gemara. It's not right. And that was part of the pressure to be mevatlit, and he felt it's right to be mevatlit. His stipulation was that they're not be fighting because of it. He was very careful about it. Many of his shuvas, and Baruch Hashem, it went through b'shalom, and it was no problem. There were other issues. The people there were superstitious, amaratzim, and there were certain things that were strange. L'mashal, people felt that since certain problems are caused by Shadim, so the best thing would be to worship the Shadim a little bit, to offer them sacrifices. And people would offer sacrifices to Shadim to keep them, you know, calm and kind of a conciliatory mood and not do anything bad. And he writes, he can't believe that the Rabbanim let this pass by. It's real Avodah Zarah and so on. And he writes at the end of the tshuva, it's not that I don't believe in Shadim, but what you're doing is being over Avodah Zarah. And that's incredible. So he writes very strongly against that. I assume he was Mevatlet. They also had, I'm not clear, it's hard to tell what it is, they had Goyish dancers dancing at weddings in what appears to be not very tzniistic way. Hard to tell, I don't know, it mentions a term, hard to tell what it is exactly. He was mevatel that. He also, the goyim, when they would bury Jews in the grave, in the Beis HaKvaris, they would be attacked by goyim. And what happened is people would just give over the body to a person to take care of it. This person supposedly would sneak some way, you know, or to the Beis HaKvaris and get it done. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case a lot of times, and a lot of people were left by bizayon. He instituted a Chever Kadisha system where you had a whole group of people and you know, they defended it and so on. He was, you know, it was something that he instituted to bring back Kavod HaMeis the way it should be. There was another strange minhag that he writes very strongly against. If God forbid a woman died in childbirth, and it wasn't uncommon, unfortunately, and the fetus would be already alive in the womb, but it would be alive. So medically, what could be done is you cut open the stomach and you take out the child, like you do a cesarean. The quote unquote minhag was that the women would beat her stomach with sticks until the uber would die. I don't know if that was a superstition. I don't know what it was. And he writes ferociously about it. You know, obviously, that this is akin to Nitzas Hashem, it's not Ritzicha Mamish, and so on and so forth. He was avat that. It all seems to have been products of superstition, of just picking up from the local culture, and he fought very strongly against these things. He also, there are some tshuvas of his that are a very, very important bizman hazeh, and that is karoyim and falashes. The question of, are the falashen Jews? So he takes it as a given that they're from Shevet Dan. And when this question arose in bizman hazeh, he actually, this becomes the one of the most important psakim that we have, defining them as Jews. It's hard, you know, I mean, it's not 100% foolproof. We don't know which exactly Ethiopians and so on. But based on his tshuva, and Rav Avadi Yosef based his psakim on it, there are Jews who are in Ethiopia. They are his dachshunds, Ethiopians, they come from Shevet Dan, and we consider them Jewish. The Karoyim, the Karyat community, there was also shilas about that. They were a large community, they were a strong community, and once in a while, you would have Karoyim that would become what they call Rabbanim, meaning they became from, they believe in Torah Sheba'al Peh, but you had all sorts of issues about marrying with them. So he paskins that if they accept on themselves to follow Torah Sheba'al Peh, we should accept them in our communities and make them part of communities. Other paskim had a lot of issues with Kedushin and Gittin. The Kedushin is pretty much good Kedushin. Gittin is a problem, but Al Kaponim, he was Mater and Mekel. And again, that became later on a very strong smach. There are still karoyim around, there's tiny communities, but they're living at Yisrael. And the defining psak is his psakim. Another area that's very interesting, he was a mekubal. So two tshuvas that are interesting. One is he had a certain shayla that he passed him away, and then he had a dream that he's terribly wrong and so on and so forth. And he writes that, and he had charata from his psak. But there's a second one that somebody fixed a Sefer Torah. We have a Masoros Harayot Sefer Torah. The Zohar Kaddish has a different, the Zohar Kaddish has some sort of drush on the pasuk where it sounds that it's a mole, and a sofer wrote a Sefer Torah like that. And then when they tried to tell him to change or whatever, he said somebody else had tried to change it from the way the Zohar Kaddish writes, and he died in that year and so on. So obviously the Zohar is right and so on. He writes a very, very strong tshuva that nothing can override Bavli and a Masoros. He says we can follow the Zohar Kaddish when it's a Chumrah, or when it's not mentioned in the Gemara, but you cannot use it to override something that's a Kli Halacha. And he was very strong about it, very adamant about it. And that also becomes a sort of bedrock psak against using Kabbalah in any way to change the Halacha in any way. This is a handful of some of his more fascinating psakim. He writes in some place that not to be machmed too much because, hopefully people keep halach at least. The dayenu that you should keep halacha, but let's not be over machmir. There are a lot of other very fascinating tshuvas, but I think these are the main ones. As we said before, he left Egypt, went to Yerushalayim. He ended up in Tzfas. He was part of that Chabura. He's spoken about with great reverence from the Beis Yosef. He lived in Tzfas in that extraordinary tkufa of where you had Kamat Kol Gadol Yisrael. But his Ikka accomplishment, Ikka work, was in Egypt. he basically had to navigate, he had to maneuver a community that was stuck somewhere in the Rambam's times and take it through a whole new change where the community was now becoming, Bal Karchach, it had to become part of a bigger tzibur. And the Radvaz's standing was such that he was able to do it. I mean, people resist change, and the Radvaz was so big and so chashev that they did it. And as strong as he was, he still was very, very much makpid, that whatever changes he makes, they should be b'derech shalom. If very few things are worth it if you have to create a tremendous machlokas in the community. So a lot of things he writes, that this, you know, they should do it, but it should be dafka b'derech shalom, and so on. Ironically, he himself, because he stood up to people that were powerful and wealthy, was forced out of Yerushalayim because of it and suffered a lot because of it. And he writes, you know, I thought I would finally be sitting al menucha and, you know, and evil forces gathered against me. I assumed that that's the story, but in the history of Klal Yisrael, he goes down as somebody who was the Rav of Mitzrayim. The Sfarim write that in Mitzrayim, the Halacha is like Radvaz, even over the Rambam. The Rambam is no longer considered the Marad Asr of Mitzrayim. After Radvaz, his Pesachim take the day. And incredible that some of the Pesachim that he writes became... And no one knew how to deal with Ethiopian Jews, with Karoyim. His Pesachim are the foundation for any Pesachim about it. So the outside is, like we said, Chaf Aleph Cheshvan, and Yehi Zecher Baruch.